Good morning. How are all of you? I had too many fireworks, I guess. Did you have a great celebration this last couple of days? Isn't it exciting to have that kind of a celebration? To remember the freedoms that we have, the responsibilities that come with them, and to be able then to share that with people around us and to celebrate the freedoms we enjoy and what it means and how throughout the world we are those who express and declare freedom. It's a great privilege, isn't it? It's a great privilege, and we should never take it for granted, never lightly look at the freedoms that we have and the price that was paid for our freedoms. And today we celebrate that together. It's exciting to be here with you, and my wife and I, we lived in Annapolis for 3.5 years, and we moved to Northern Virginia, and everyone over there said, "Why in the world would you do that?" And I'm still not sure. Because over there, they all think that Annapolis is like heaven. You know, it's like, why would you leave heaven to come over here? So the Lord sent my wife and I to Northern Virginia to work with Fellowship of Christian Athletes. It's a great ministry, a great organization, working with coaches and athletes professionally, on the collegiate levels, high school, middle schools, and helping them to find Christ and to grow in Christ. And it's an amazing ministry. Today, I would like to just walk through some things with you about hitting bottom. And maybe you've heard stories of those who have had struggles in their lives and they are unwilling to change. And so we say they need to hit bottom before they will change. And then we wait for them. We wait for them to crash and then they see that place and then they respond and get the help they need or make a new decision and head on a new course for their lives. And sometimes we joke about this hitting bottom and we say it's not a bad place to be because there's only one way to look up. And maybe you're here today and there's been some struggles in your life. Maybe it's possible that you're stuck in some thick mud and you're near that bottom place and you're just trying to get out of it. Maybe it's a difficult situation in your workplace and it's a struggle. Maybe it's with your family. It could be a marriage relationship. It could be just a relationship in general. It could be as a parent and you're with your children and there's a struggle there. It could be as a child and there's the issues that you seem to see with classmates and people at school and their struggle and there's opportunity that just doesn't seem to present itself. Maybe it's a substance abuse issue for you and you've struggled with it and now you're at an all-time low and you're just trying to find your way. Where is the way and how to get out of this place? Hitting bottom and it's a struggle. Maybe it's a health issue that has come your way and that you are struggling with it and wondering why is it that it's you who has this struggle and that there is no hope or there's no cure for what you have. Or maybe it's a loved one who has passed away and you're still just wrestling with that and why did it happen and how do I respond and what is my life going to be like and what should I do? How should I respond to these things? Maybe it's something down deep inside that only you are aware of and only you know of. And there's this struggle and maybe you're stuck in this mud, this place where you just can't seem to get out of it. Hitting bottom. Today I'd like to take us to a story of two people from the New Testament. And there's something amazing about their story that we can benefit from them and to hear it and to be reminded and see how they responded to Christ in their lives and how He was the one who was there for them. You'll find it in Mark chapter 5. And this is a place where there were two people who had no place to go. There was no hope. They were in a desperate place. You see, we must remember Jesus. Jesus came onto the scene with a message of hope. He came onto the scene bringing a message of grace. He came on a scene saying that there is some good and help and hope for those, the sick, the undesirables, the sinners. And there's a powerful lesson for each one of us to learn from that. And that message still rings clear and strong today that Jesus came with a message of hope, a message of purpose, a message of eternal life. And we get to experience that. So let's look at Mark 5, 21 to 24. When Jesus had again crossed over by boat to the other side of the lake, a large crowd gathered around him while he was by the lake. Then one of the synagogue rulers named Jairus came there. Seeing Jesus, he fell at his feet and pleaded earnestly with him, "My little daughter is dying. Please come and put your hands on her so that she will be healed and live." So Jesus went with him. A large crowd followed and pressed around him. Jairus is a synagogue leader, an official. His daughter is at the point of death. Luke tells us that she was his only child. And there he was, coming, trying to find some help and hope with Jesus, that he might do something, that he would come and heal her. He begs Jesus earnestly, come and lay hands on her. Jesus, if you would just touch my daughter, she would be healed. In that moment of desperation, that is where he is earnestly pleading with Jesus. Now, Jairus was a member of the synagogue. Those who were there were opposed to Jesus. They did not like him. They did not like his growing popularity. They did not like that people were following him, as was this crowd. People were following Jesus in great numbers, and they were concerned that he would do something wrong or radically different or would remove them from their place of position of popularity or power. They did not like Jesus at all, and they had talked often of his death, how to get rid of Jesus. But yet Jairus comes to Jesus. There is this fear. My one and only daughter is about to die. My daughter is, she's my only hope. And for a parent, this is a very grave thing when a child is at that point. A parent will give up anything so that their child will find that help or that hope. To be able to be healed, a parent will go to great lengths so that that would be remedied. And here is Jairus, one who was opposed to Jesus but came to a desperate place. He had hit bottom. He came and earnestly sought Jesus that he would come to heal his daughter. He's weighed down and burdened with fear. And in his desperation, he comes. So on the way they go. And while they're on the way, there's an interruption. Jesus is interrupted. There's this large crowd following, and there's a great interruption. And while this interruption was occurring, some members, a messenger, came from Jairus' house and said, Jairus, it's too late. Your daughter has died. Leave the teacher alone. Let him go on with what he was doing. Let's go. It's over. It's not supposed to happen that way, is it? It's not supposed to happen that a parent will see their child die. It isn't supposed to be that way. It should be the other way around. And to lose a child, it's one of the most extreme, painful situations to encounter. It's extremely difficult, and there are no answers. It's unimaginable. It's outside of the bounds of comprehension. The weight, the pain, the loss is beyond what one could bear. Let's look at verses 25 to 29 and see this interruption. And so as Jesus was on the way, in a large crowd, and this is what took place. And a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had. Yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. When she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak, because she thought, if I just touch his clothes, I will be healed. If I just touch his clothes... Here's this woman who comes and she interrupts. She has had this issue for 12 years. It says that she had been to the doctors. She had spent all of her money and they had bungled her case. She was worse off than when she started. And she was at this now desperate place and wondering, what do I do? And then she thought, if I could just get to Jesus, if I could just touch the cloak, his clothes, I would be healed. And that was her hope. She believed that about Jesus, and she took the risk. The crowd was large and pressing in on Jesus. And most likely she had to cover herself because it was wrong for her to be in public and to have this disease, whatever it was wrong for her to even be there. So she probably covered herself the best she knew how. And through this crowd, she weaved her way through. And maybe it was through a couple of people, and she reached out and she touched the cloak of Jesus. As a Jewish rabbi, Jesus probably wore a prayer shawl. A prayer shawl is called a tallit. Can you say that word with me? Say tallit. Tallit. It's an amazing piece of clothing to wear. This was something that God instructed way back in Numbers, chapter 15, around verse 38. And he said, I want you to put onto your garments tassels. called tzitzit. I want you to put them on there so that you will remember my commands and that you will obey them always. And so these were placed on their robes. It was something similar to this, and on each corner you would see two tassels on this side and two on this side. And on each tassel, there were five knots that represented the books of Moses, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. And there were four spaces which represented the name of God, Yahweh, YHWH. And then 613 threads tied together, representing the 613 requirements of the Torah. And the inside, the Ten Commandments. And on each shoulder, the Ten Commandments. And Jesus was wearing something similar to this. Tzitzit, off of the ends. Talit. Malachi, several hundred years later, prophesied that Messiah would come with healing in his or its wings. And the word used in Numbers 15 for corner is the same word used for wings in Malachi. And so on this particular day, as this woman was coming, she was saying to herself, Messiah has healing in his wings. And if I could just touch the corner of his garment, I will be healed. And the connotation of the passage tells us that she said that as she walked. If I can only touch the hem of his garment, I will be healed. If I only touch the corner of his garment, I will be healed. And that is the approach she took as she was coming near to Jesus. A tallit is also called a prayer closet. A huppah. Imagine all of the people in the state of Maryland wanting to come into this room today as their place of worship. In Israel's day, they had a tent of meetings, the place where people would come and worship. But 5 million people cannot fit there. And so they would have one of these, and so they would raise it up over their head, and it would become a prayer closet. And whenever someone had this position, you knew that they were praying, talking to God, their place of worship, them with God. And this is what Jesus had on that day. And she saw him out. Here's this woman saying to herself what she believed was true about Messiah, that he would have healing in his wings. And in her desperation, she made that step, took the action to reach out to touch him. If I can just get Jesus, Jairus said, to come and touch my daughter, she will be healed. If I can just touch the hem of his garment, I will be healed. For many years, I took whitewater rafting trips to West Virginia to the New River. And we would raft through rapids class 3, class 4, and class 5. The class 5 rapids were pretty exciting. To me, they were the most exciting, but also the most fearful. For they were most difficult, most challenging, dangerous, a lot of obstacles, steep drops. What an exciting way to run a raft. Thankfully, there was a guide in the back that knew how to steer where we were headed. But in these rapids, especially in the class fives, the water is cascading over these obstacles, these huge rocks, with great force, and it's shoving water down very quickly and through all this stuff. And what happens is the water downstream actually comes over the top of the water that's going downstream, creating a hydraulic or a hole. And if you get caught in one of these, you would think the best thing to do would be swim out of it. Work with all your might to get out of this hole. But really the best thing is to stop and to release that attempt and allow the water to push you out. Have you ever been in such a place where life is coming at you with such intensity that everywhere you go, every direction you look, every attempt you make, that's what it's like. All of life is coming down at you so rapidly, and there you are stuck in everything that is coming back towards you, and you try with all of your might, with everything that you have, to get out of this trouble, this situation, to get out of this challenge that you find yourself in. And there you are, struggling with all your might and not being released from it. Notice in verse 36, Jesus' response to Jairus. It's an amazing word. And as Jesus was there, this is what he had to say. Now remember, there was this interruption. There was this woman. And there was this conversation. And Jairus is still standing there. And Jesus looks to him and says very simply, Jairus, do not be afraid. Keep on believing. Jairus, stop doing this. Stop being filled with fear. And do this. Keep on believing. Keep your confidence, your hope in me. Jairus, listen. Do not be afraid. Keep believing. Place your hope in me. Don't be afraid. Why would Jesus say that? Don't be afraid. Have you ever said that to anyone? You know, we face fear every day. And we say it to other individuals. Don't be afraid. But yet on the inside, there are fears that we have in every moment almost. And fear is that great paralyzing factor in our lives. Jesus said, don't be afraid. Keep on trusting. Keep on believing, Jairus. In Joshua 1, verse 9, as Joshua was taking the commands, a commandment over all of the Israelites, the new leader, and God said to him, Joshua, don't be afraid, don't be discouraged, don't be dismayed, for I am your God. I will be with you wherever you go. Don't be afraid, Joshua. And that time when the angel came to Mary and was telling her this great news, and he says to her, Mary, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. How about Isaiah chapter 41 and verse 10? So do not, and this should be a verse that you could memorize for your life. And it goes like this. So do not fear, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. Don't be afraid. Don't be dismayed. I am with you. I am your God. I will strengthen you. I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. Anytime that you see the phrase righteous right hand speaking to God, it's speaking to the strength of God or His strongest element. Now, that's maybe kind of hard to figure out that God actually has a strongest element. But when it says His righteous right hand, that means with all of the strength that God has, He says, don't be afraid, don't fear, don't be dismayed, for I am with you, I am your God, and I will strengthen you. I will help you. I'll hold you up. You see, we need to be like David, King David. And he said, I lift my eyes up to the mountains. Where does my help come from? My help comes from the Maker of heaven and earth. I lift my eyes up to the mountains. And where does my help come from? It comes from the one who, by his spoken word, put all of this into order. Put it all into existence. And that is the God who says, I will be with you. I will help you. I will strengthen you. I'll hold you up. We must come to a place where we really are honest about ourselves. Often, we think we have a lot to offer to God. And we think that we have great gifts. And just think, if God didn't have me, it would be harder for Him to get His work done. We may not like say that, but maybe the way we live, we're speaking that. And really what we need to do is come to an honest understanding of ourselves. You know, what is it that we are afraid of? As a parent, are you afraid that your son or daughter, who maybe is in the 10th or 11th grade, sophomore, junior, maybe a senior this year, and you don't see the spiritual depth that you've wished for and hoped for? Are you afraid of that? Are you afraid that your marriage isn't going to make it? That your spouse might leave? Are you afraid of your boss? That he's coming after you? It's time for evaluations and that feeling you've got is that you might be let go? What is it that you have fears about? Are you afraid that you've been working all of your life and when you retire you won't have enough that will sustain you and your wife over the years? Are you afraid of that? Are you afraid that you will never find the right person to marry? Are you afraid that your health will fail? Are you afraid that you won't get that job? Are you afraid that you won't make that team? We walk through each day and there are fears that continue to wrestle with us. And we need to do as this woman and as Jairus to find our strength in Christ. Be honest with yourself and with God. And step forward and ask Jesus Christ to help you. It is He who said, there again, Isaiah 41, verse 10, don't be afraid. Don't fear. I am with you. He is with us. And He said, don't be dismayed. I'm your God. And I will strengthen you. I will help you. Notice what Jesus said to the woman in verse 34. Amazing words again. Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace. Daughter, your faith has made you well. Your confidence and hope in me has brought forward this that you were hoping for. Go in peace. The word peace here is shalom. Go in shalom. Peace isn't just the absence of conflict, but peace is the wellness or wholeness of your whole person. You spiritually, mentally, emotionally, socially, physically. When Jesus said to her, go in shalom, that's what He was saying to her. I want you to go in peace, wholeness, wellness of your spiritual life, your emotional life, your mental capacities, your social life, your physical life. Go in shalom. Shalom. Daughter, your faith, your trust in me has healed you, has made you well. Go. Now go in shalom. Acts 10, verse 36. It says, the gospel is the gospel of peace. The gospel of shalom to us. It is that which comes to us to redeem us spiritually, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, physically. The gospel, the message of it is a gospel of salvation that rescues us from the dominion of darkness, from Satan's clutches, from the grips of sin, and sets us free. This is the peace, the shalom that God gives to us. That is His gospel, His message to us. Often we confuse it or just think it's for us in our spiritual life only. No. Jesus, who from Isaiah 9:6 says, He is the Prince of Peace, comes to redeem all of you. All of who you are. Not just one aspect of you. And that is His message to us, the gospel of peace. Ephesians 2:14 says, for He Himself is our peace. Jesus Himself is our shalom. The wellness and wholeness of our entire being. That is the good news, that we can be redeemed that way. And being redeemed that way, therefore we can move forward in life to bring about the greatness of God in this world and to help Him bring good and to overcome evil with that good. Peace cannot happen until we come to that honest place in our own hearts and to evaluate who we are before God. Philippians 4, verses 6 and 7. And it says this, and it's prefaced by the last few words of verse 5, and it says in the last few words of verse 5, the Lord is near. The Lord is near. So don't be anxious about anything. Don't be anxious about anything. But in everything, with prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. And the peace of God, which is greater or transcends our understanding, will guard our hearts and our minds in Christ Jesus. In everything, offer it up to the Lord. He is near us. And when we offer it up to Him that way, and it says that He is with us and He will give to us His shalom. And often we think of this peace as being something that's beyond our comprehension. And that's not what it is saying. It's not saying that this peace comes and we don't really get it or understand it, but it's there. But this peace that God gives to us when we commit all that we have to Him is a peace that is greater than our need. Extends beyond the need that we have. And so as we present our things to God in prayer, with thanksgiving, our petitions, all that we are, it says that He comes and He gives us peace. He sends His garrisons of angels to surround us and give us shalom. I'm not saying this morning that if you have enough faith in God and that if you trust Him in a great measure, that He will heal you of all things and that He'll take all of the troubles of your life away. But what I am saying is that He will be with you. He will give to you strength. He will give you grace. He is there for you. He will give you peace so that you can continue on where you are. Where are you in the need of a touch of Jesus today? What is the connection between this woman, Jairus, and us? What is the connection? The connection is knowing who Jesus is and by faith, reaching out to Him. And doing so from a position of dependence. That is how He wants us to come. And often that's not the way we come. We come to Him thinking that we still have something to offer that's great. That we still can help God out with His plan. And we aren't looking at who we are. We really are dependent. You know, in Him we live and move and have our being. What is created comes forth from Him. We cannot sustain ourselves without Christ. We just can't. Remove Jesus out of your life and what do you have? And so we need to be honest about who we are. Jairus and this woman came to Him in a position of desperation and they trusted in Him. And when they left, things were different. Listen to some words from the New Testament. Jesus said, "Come to Me, all of you, any of you who are burdened and weary with life, and I will give you rest. Take My yoke upon you and learn from Me. For I am gentle and humble, and My way is light, the burden is light, and you will find rest for your soul. Come to Me." 1 Peter 5:7 says, "Cast all of your care, all of your worries, all of your concerns on Him because He cares for you." It is so true. He does that. Verse 16, it says that we may approach the throne of grace with confidence and boldness to find help in our time of need. Didn't we sing this morning this song that comes from Job chapter 1? Blessed, my heart will say, blessed be the name of the Lord no matter what has come to my life. Is it Job who was in a desperate situation? Who he had lost all except for his wife. And there he is. And what does he say? Blessed be the name of the Lord. He gives and takes away. And there Job, in his desperation, knew that there was one place for him to rest. And it was in God. Didn't we sing a song this morning about the unchanging faithfulness of God? Didn't we sing that? I think I heard something about grace too. In our songs this morning. And those are words given to us so that we might hear the call of God in our lives today. Listen to His voice. What is He saying? I'm sure He's saying to you, as He would be saying and is saying to me, don't be afraid. Trust in Me. Don't be afraid. Trust in Me. Don't be afraid. And Jesus is saying, believe in Me. Keep on believing. Come to Me. Learn from Me. I am the God of shalom for you. Imagine that day when Jesus entered Jairus' house. It tells us what happened there. As He entered, it says that He found everyone crying and wailing. And Jesus said, "Where's the girl? She's only asleep." And it says that they started laughing at Him, for she had already died. And so Jesus took Jairus, his wife, Peter, James, and John, and entered into her room. And it says that He reached and grabbed her by the hand, and He said, "Talitha kum," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, arise." And she got up, and she was 12 years old, and they were astonished. Imagine that day in that house. Jairus, who was a part of a group who did not like Jesus and wanted Him away, but yet in his desperation came to Him and he pleaded earnestly and said, "If you would just come and touch my daughter, she would be healed." And Jesus said, "Don't be afraid. believe. Imagine that day, that woman who had heard about Jesus. It was a great risk. And she covered herself the best she could and made her way through this crowd and reached through and touched his cloak. One of those tassels. Something about his clothes. And in that very instant, she knew that something had changed. That she had been healed. And remember, Jesus stopped and he said, "Who touched me?" And the disciples said, "Jesus, are you forgetting we're in the midst of a crowd and they're pressing in on you? A lot of people are touching you." And it says he looked around. He said, "Someone touched me," and there he saw her. And it says that she came forward and said to him, "I knew that if I could touch your cloak, I would be healed." Imagine what was going through her mind in that moment. There was this great excitement, but also embarrassment, I'm sure. And wondering, is this really true? Is it really happened? And then imagine her walking away and going back to her home saying, "I can't wait till I tell him what just happened. I just can't wait to tell him." And I'm sure she was saying, "Thank you, Jesus, for what you've done for me. Thank you, thank you." "He who dwells in the shelter of the Most High will rest in the shadow of the Almighty. He will cover you with his feathers, and under his wings you will find refuge. There's room for you under God's wing. Come to him today." I'm going to ask you to take an honest look at yourself and where you are. I want you to think about, what are the elements or places where there's fear in my life? And where is it that I haven't fully trusted God in my life for those things? It may be today it's a huge thing, or maybe it's a small thing. But understanding that here I am and I need to come to Christ and to find his help, to find his hope, to find his healing for my life. And so I'm going to invite your worship team to come and lead us in a song. And while they sing, in a time of meditation, I want you to be thinking and praying and talking to the Lord. And if there's something about your life that needs a touch from the Lord today, I want to invite you just to stand at your seat. Just stand there. And as the worship team finishes, then I will pray. So this is our time to respond to the Lord and his voice to us.